WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. For the week of May 26th, on this episode of Redux, we take a look at the infrastructure of Jacksonville. Coming up, a representative of Jacksonville heads to Capitol Hill to discuss the future of transportation.
You know, Americans sit in traffic about 7 billion hours a year, and that costs us about $300 billion in wasted time and fuel.
Then, what do you do if you're a senior citizen and the only bus stop is across 8 lanes of traffic?
And the cars start going. You gotta stand in the middle of the road, and they don't slow down for nothing.
And once you get to the stop, depending on where you live, lies another set of obstacles.
During the day, it's brutal hot, and you sit there, and you'll get sunburned in 10 minutes, and you have to wait there sometimes for an hour, hour and a half.
One Jacksonville City Councilman is hoping to make sure all bus stops, at least according to ridership, are created equal. And finally, the renaissance of historic Springfield continues, one beer at a time.
By the loosening of existing zoning regulations, we're seeing a booming industry come into the community, the craft brewing industry.
All this and more on this episode of Redux, but first, some news. Florida State College at Jacksonville is bracing to deal with a $3 million budget cut. The school's president, Cynthia Bioto, says the cut would result in laying off more than 70 staffers. As WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, she's now calling on supporters to contact Governor Rick Scott.
Lawmakers say they cut $30 million from the college system's budget, partly because fewer students are enrolling in remedial classes. Those are courses meant to get struggling incoming students up to speed. As the Miami Herald reports, Florida colleges have been offering fewer of the classes after a state law 2 years ago required fewer students to take them. But on WJCT's First Coast Connect Wednesday, FSCJ President Cynthia Bioto said those students are still enrolling. They're just getting help from the campus tutoring center. She called out two Northeast Florida senators for approving the cuts.
And I would consider beginning with Senator Aaron Bean and Senator Audrey Gibson, and then looking at all of our representatives that are local to wherever you live. Phone calls, emails to help them make FSCJ whole again in our operating budget.
Jacksonville Democrat Audrey Gibson says if it weren't for community college advocates like her, the cuts would have been much deeper.
It could have been, I think of the $55 million, I think you restored half, $25 million of the developmental education cut.
Gibson says she's listening to the concerns, but she doubts the governor will veto large parts of the state's more than $80 billion budget. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Jacksonville is a big city. In fact, it's the largest city in the continental U.S. with roughly 840 square miles of territory, much of which is paved. And paving roads cost money not only in construction, but in maintenance and eventually updating. Just this week, the Trump administration released an ambitious plan for rebuilding the nation, centering around a $1 trillion infrastructure package. That's right, $1 trillion. Marty Fiorentino of Jacksonville's The Fiorentino Group spent roughly 2 months in Washington, D.C., working with U.S. Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao on the administration's plan for improving America's transportation network as well as infrastructure spending. He was on First Coast Connect earlier this week to discuss some of the biggest takeaways from the trip.
Well, I can tell you that the president has made this a priority, and I think everyone knows that by now, and is challenging the American people to look at transportation as something that's not only potholes and waiting in traffic, which costs, Americans sit in traffic about 7 billion hours a year, and that costs us about $300 billion in wasted time and fuel, so there's an environmental impact to that, but also the productivity that's lost and the competitiveness that we need today in order to have be able to compete in a global economy.
So, if fixing potholes and building more roads isn't the key to shoring up infrastructure, what is? Well, a large part of competing in a global economy rests squarely in the tech sector, he said, which brings us to the Jacksonville Transportation Authority.
since the advent of the airplane, there's not been a more exciting time in this country as it relates to transportation. Take the JTA, for example. They're looking, what do we do with the Skyway Express now? It is old, it's antiquated, and the technology, you can't even find parts for it. So can we get a system that is an autonomous vehicle that the Skyway level, and then it comes down to street level, and then comes here into the sports complex? Automated vehicles are going to change the way we look at transportation.
And the modernization of Jacksonville's Skyway monorail system is actually already underway. JTA CEO Nate Ford announced this past week its plan for what's called the Ultimate Urban Circulator Project, and mirroring what Fiorentino just said, the future is now for autonomous transit technology in Jacksonville.
We envision an east-west connection on the North Bank from Five Points to the sports complex, a connection to San Marco, the Baptist MD Anderson complex, and the planned district development, the Springfield neighborhood with future connectivity to UF Health and the VA hospital.
Ford says phase one of the project is already underway, and that includes rehabbing or replacing Skyway cars. He didn't give a timeline for the route expansions, but said it's critical they be completed as soon as possible. The Skyway has been operating for more than three decades and has more than 1 million riders annually.
It's a Jacksonville Jazz Festival week. I'm your host, David Luckin of the Electro Lounge, and Friday and Saturday night, we will be playing all jazz from 9 o'clock until midnight on Saturday and 9 to 11 on Friday. So if you can't go to the Jazz Festival, listen to jazz on the radio. If you're going to the Jazz Festival, listen to us on your way home. It's a Jazz Festival week in Jacksonville, and we are happy to be playing jazz at the Electro Lounge. Join us only on 89.9 online or the app. We've got your jazz at the Electro Lounge. Only on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Continuing on the theme of transportation on the First Coast, we now turn our attention away from monorails and autonomous vehicles to focus on transportation issues folks around here deal with on a daily basis. Jacksonville State Senator Audrey Gibson recently met with a group of senior citizens dealing with the closure of the only grocery store within walking distance of their apartment complex. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride brings you this report.
Madison Manor Senior Living is on Hogan Road near Beach Boulevard. Most residents walk to Winn-Dixie, about a block away. But with the stores closing, they'll have to figure out how to get to other grocery stores. Russ Holgerson has lived here 7 years. He says the problem with the city bus is even though seniors ride for free, it drops people off on the opposite side of Beach Boulevard. That's 8 lanes of traffic to cross.
You start walking, you get halfway, it changes. And the cars start going. You got to stand in the middle of the road, and they don't slow down for nothing.
Friday, Senator Gibson called a meeting in Madison Manor's community room and invited the Jacksonville Transportation Authority.
I'm a solution-oriented, solution-driven, and we're going to get to every solution possible for the residents here and other people in the area who need transportation.
The room is packed with people, many using wheelchairs or walkers. JTA VP of Planning and Development, Brad Thoburn, says his takeaway is,
let's see what our service looks like here. What are things that they have access to that they may not be accessing, and see how we can help them.
He says JTA can look into changing bus routes, but a former bus stop right in front of the complex averaged just 2 riders a day, so it was cut. Gibson says she's hoping JTA will consider dropping people off on the other side of Beach now that the store is closing. JTA also offers a ride service for disabled people, but residents say it's too expensive, $3 each way. They all make under $28,000 a year. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Lindsay continues her report about transportation on the First Coast. As she said in the last story, while ridership numbers dictate where bus stops are located, not all Jacksonville bus stops are created equal. Just drive through the River City sometime and look around. Some stops have benches, some have shelters, while other stops are simply signs staked into the ground. Now, a Westside City Councilman is questioning how the Jacksonville Transportation Authority prioritizes which stops get shelters and which neighborhoods seem to be getting left out.
It's 92 degrees and the sky is threatening a thunderstorm as Michael Smith is walking off a JTA bus to start a shift at Golden Corral on Normandy Boulevard. He rides this route 6 days a week.
During the day, it's brutal hot and you just sit there and you'll get sunburned in 10 minutes and you have some wait there sometimes for an hour, hour and a half.
The stop is marked with a sign, but has no bench or covering. It would qualify for a shelter under JTA standard because, on average, at least 40 riders get on here every day. But it's not on JTA's list to get one this year. Of the city's more than 2,600 bus stops, just 13% have shelters.
It's not adding up. You know, we just have to do better. And I can't defend this to taxpayers.
At City Hall, Councilman Reggie Brown is flipping through a packet listing all the city's bus stops.
Here we go, right here. 2.1.
That's how many riders one San Marcos stop with a shelter averages, two a day. A JTA spokeswoman says that shelter was installed by someone else, not the Public Transportation Authority. But of the city's 372 shelters, nearly two-thirds are at stops that don't meet JTA's bar of at least 40 riders a day.
You can see in a more affluent communities that the numbers are extremely low, but yet they have very nice bus shelters. And I like to be able to stand before the community and say, no, your assumption is wrong. But in this case, I don't believe that they're wrong.
JTA says it didn't start prioritizing stops with high ridership until around 2015. Many shelters were installed before then. But ever since, 88% of shelters installed or planned for installation are in Northwest Jacksonville and Arlington. But Brown wants JTA to consider factors other than ridership, like whether stops are near schools or retirement homes. Those stops may have fewer than 40 riders now, but Brown says they would
probably have more if the conditions were better.
94 stops qualify for new or replacement shelters, 40 of them planned for this year. But money is a big barrier. Each installation costs $20,000, and annual maintenance for all of them costs the city $700,000. Also, JTA says some stops that need them don't have the space or they'd infringe on private property. Brown says that's something City Council can help work through. Lindsay Kilbride, 89.9 WJCT News.
Here's an update to our continuing coverage on the opioid crisis on the First Coast. Florida Surgeon General shed light on how federal opioid crisis funds will be given out in Duval and other counties. As WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, more than $27 million will be used in regions most affected by addiction and overdoses.
State Surgeon General Celeste Phillips spoke at a series of workshops on the opioid crisis shortly before declaring a public health emergency earlier this month. She says the money will go toward fighting addiction in Duval, Orange, Palm Beach, and Manatee counties.
At each of those workshops, we heard proposals for how each county was going to address overdoses, provide medication-assisted treatment, as well as other therapies and wraparound services.
Phillips says the Department of Children and Families will disperse the money through regional entities that decide which programs will be funded. In Duval, that's Lutheran Services Florida. Duval Health Department Director Kelly Wells, who was recently named as Phillips' deputy secretary, says county health departments must act in a supportive capacity. Duval's focus will be preventing pregnancy in opiate-addicted mothers and providing services to babies born addicted.
So a place that we can step in with our family planning programs in terms of using long-term, long-acting reversible contraceptives to prevent, you know, unintended pregnancies in this at-risk population.
Wells also said she'd like to enact a needle exchange program similar to a Miami pilot lawmakers approved 2 years ago. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
And finally, Jacksonville's Springfield neighborhood is booming with new development along Main Street. The latest addition is Hyperion, a craft beer brewery that opened last week. In this business brief, Modern City's founder, Ennis Davis, tells WJCT News director Jessica Palumbo a theory called market urbanism can help explain the area's expansive growth.
Ennis, we're talking about Springfield, and this is, the neighborhood right north of downtown Jacksonville, and we've seen a lot of revitalization there, but most of it has been focused in residential growth. How is that changing now?
As Springfield has redeveloped over the last 20 years, there's been a struggle to bring growth back to Main Street. And many theories back in the older days, I guess 20 years ago, was that perhaps there wasn't the right market for certain types of commercial development. And what we're seeing is that may not be true. Instead, perhaps we have certain policies and restrictions in place that have prohibited market rate growth. So what we're seeing now is a concept called market urbanism starting to take a dramatic effect on Main Street.
I am completely unfamiliar with the term market urbanism. What is that?
There may be policies and restrictions that prohibit market rate growth. So if you can loosen those policies, then you can encourage redevelopment and create an environment where small businesses may be more economically feasible.
What are we seeing now that's causing this phenomenon?
Where market urbanism comes into play is by the loosening of existing zoning regulations, we're seeing a booming industry come into the community, the craft brewing industry. It's been pretty difficult for this industry to take effect because this is a use that's not permissible by right within Jacksonville's zoning regulations. So in the case of Springfield, each individual brewery had to go through, do an individual rezoning to allow for their use. Because they were all approved, we're starting to see more redevelopment and supportive businesses starting to flock around these anchors. If we can get to a point to where we can look at those policies that prohibit booming industries that create jobs, like the craft brewing industry, and we apply that on a larger level, we'll see more redevelopment in many areas where we may have believed at one point that redevelopment was not economically feasible.
That's Ennis Davis. He's a local urban planner and the co-founder of Modern Cities. That's at moderncities.com.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. I'm Vince Kong, and thank you for listening.